And we're holding on page Aesthetic Vase in Bhava Bastra, about the middle of the page, a few lines into Aesthetic Galad. We learned yesterday, the Gemara had said that Reb Yochanan had quoted from Reb Shimon Yochai that if somebody doesn't leave a son to Yarch in him, then Hashem is full of anger at him. And we talked about what that means. Doesn't mean that he didn't get married b'chlal. Doesn't mean that he only has daughters. Doesn't mean that he didn't take care to be mechanech his sons properly, etc., etc. We talked about a number of different explanations of it yesterday. So in that connection, the Gemara brings page Tzadik Beis and blah blah. So in that connection, the Gemara brings similarly you have in Tillim, the pasuk David is talking about the Rishoyim Asherin Chalifos Lomay. They have no Chalifos V'lo Yoru Elikim and they don't fear Hashem. So in the simple meaning, Asherin Chalifos Lomay, it's towards the end of Kapitel Nun Hei. Well, that's what we're going to explain. So the simple meaning of Hashem Chalif Islam means they never change their ways. They never rethink what they're doing to do tshuva. But now the Gemara is understanding Chalifos Meloshon Chalifin, as in a substitute, someone to take over for him. So Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shurban Levi. So Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shurban Levi disagree what that pasuk is implying. Chad Omar, one says, Kol mi she'ena maniach ben, someone who doesn't leave over a son, which would go with what we said before. That someone who doesn't leave over a son to Yarshin him, then Hashem is angry at him. So here, similarly, the pasuk is saying about the Rishayim, Asher and Chalifa Islam, they have no children to take their place. V'chad Omar, the other one, between Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Shimon Levi, says, Kol mi she'ena maniach Talmid, someone who doesn't leave over a Talmid, someone who didn't bother teaching Torah when he would have been able to.
He wants 100 people
makarav every month. Yeah, so there's the idea. In other words, that a person who's able to teach has to be teaching and has to have talmidim, as the famous expression has it. If all you know is aleph and somebody doesn't even know that, then teach him aleph. So yeah. Okay. So now the Gemara will often present a machloikas like that, to saying one said this and one said that, and not say explicitly which one said which. Sometimes the Gemara will then go and try to analyze and figure out which one said which. Kiskayim, we can conclude that Rabbi Yochanan to Amar Talmid, that it must be between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon Levi, it must be Rabbi Yochanan who said that it's when a person doesn't leave over a Talmid. As opposed to Rabbi Yochanan would be saying that if a person didn't leave over a son, a living son, then it's not so bad. Why do Amar Rabbi Yochanan? Because we find that Rabbi Yochanan himself had 10 sons, and all of them passed away in his lifetime, and he would carry around a bone from one of them. Rashbam says over here that it means he would carry a tooth, which a tooth is not a tooth from a mess is not metame. So that way he's not causing tumor wherever he goes. This Gemara is also in Brachas. Rashi over there explains that it was in fact a bone, but it was a bone less than a sa'ura, less than the size of a grain of barley, which also doesn't transmit tumor. Anyway, and when he would use it to be menachem oval people who had lost children, he would tell them, "Dein garma da asira bir." This is the bone, or the tooth, as the case may be, of my 10th son. So in other words, Rabbi Yochanan could comfort them that, like, I can commiserate with you. I had 10 children myself, and they all passed away in my lifetime, and this is all I have, and this is all I have left of them. Rabbeinu Nissim Goin in that Gemara in Brachas brings a horrifying thing. He says, so the other 9, we don't know how they passed away, but he says the 10th one, the Rabbi Yochanan's 10th son, fell into a boiling vat. And at the end, by the time they schlepped him out, all that was left was this one little tiny bone. Then though, Rabbi Nissim Goin says, on the other hand, though, Yesh Omrim, he says that Rabbi Yochanan did have one living son, Rab Masna. We find in a number of places in Shas, Rab Masna, a Talmud of Shmuel. So Rabbi Nissim Goin says that some say he was a surviving son of Rabbi Yochanan. In any case, the point is that here, Rabbi Yochanan, how would Rabbi Yochanan say that if someone didn't leave over a son, he's not called a Yorei Elikim? He wouldn't say that about himself. He wouldn't publicize that he himself is a Baal Averis and call himself a Rosha. You know, you're not supposed to do that. So therefore, if he's telling people that I lost all my sons, then we must say he's the one who said nothing bad if a person doesn't have sons. The problem is if a person doesn't have Talmidim. Well, Rabbi Yochanan had many, many Talmidim, all the following generations of Amiroyim in Eretz Yisrael, and quite a few in Bavel, were his Talmidim, and Adayim Azeh were his Talmidim, because we learn his Torah. So, Yeah. So in that case, Tisayim de Rabbi Yochanan de Amar Talmud. So in that case, we can conclude that between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shulam Levi, Rabbi Yochanan must be the one who says that Asherin Chalifoy Slomer, that the Torah says as a sign of a Rosha, is somebody who did not leave over Talmidim. Well, umid Rabbi Yochanan Amar Talmud, Rabbi Shulam Levi Amar Bein. Well, then necessarily, if Rabbi Yochanan is the one who's saying that the problem is when a person doesn't leave over a Talmud, then by elimination, Rabbi Shulam Levi would be the one who says when he doesn't leave over a son. The problem with that is, Vahar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, like Ozil of Beit Tamya. On the other hand, we find that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi would never go to a Shiva house. Beit Tamya means a place where mess had passed away. Rashban explains the word Tamya means mason, or in some other places, Rashi explains that Tamya means bones. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi generally would not go to a Shiva house to be Menachem Avil, because Rashban says he didn't want to take off time from learning Torah. Ella, with one exception, Lamanda Shachid Bloy Bunny. When a person passed away without children, then Rabbi Shua ben Levi would go to the Shiva house. Dichtiv, as we find the Pasuk showing how bad off such a person is, the Pasuk says, Bechu Vachoy Laholach. You should cry, you should continuously cry for the one who goes. V'omer Rabbi Yehuda Amarab, Laholach Bloy Ben Zachar. Rabbi Yehuda explains in the name of Rav, specifically that means someone who goes away from this world without leaving behind a son. Because as we talked about yesterday, a son will continue his ruchnius, will continue his mitzvahs, will learn Torah on his behalf, will say Kaddish on his behalf. So when a person passes away without a son, then Rabbi Shua ben Levi considered that such a tremendous tragedy that for that it's worth taking off time from his learning Torah to go be Menachem Avil in the house there. So therefore we see that Rabbi Shimon Levi obviously is not going to consider such a person that's a sign of a Rosha, otherwise why would he go to such a Shiva house? So we have a problem over here. We're saying that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon Levi, one of them says if a person passes away without sons, then it's a bad thing. But Rabbi Yochanan can't be on the face of it, because he's telling people that I myself lost 10 sons. It can't be Rabbi Shimon Levi, because why would he go to be Menachem Avil by such a person? So which one is the one that said that when he goes without a son, Kol Mishein Amaniach Ben is it shows as a sign of a Rosha, Hashem and Chalif Islamai, which one is it? So we have to say Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi who d'omar Talmud. It must be that after all, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is the one who said that when a person doesn't leave a Talmud, then that's a bad thing. Because he should have at least, he had the ability to teach people Torah, and why did he not do that? Umid Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi who do Amar Talmud Rabbi Yochanan Amar Ben. But then the question is, Kasha de Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yochanan. But then don't we have a contradiction? If Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says that when a person doesn't leave a son, it's a bad thing. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan is telling people, this is the bone of my 10th son, that I lost all of my 10 sons. And the answer is like Kasha Hodi Dei Hodi Rabbi. The answer is there's a difference between his own opinion versus the opinion of his Rebbe, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Before, when he said that Kol Mishein Emanech Ben Yoshei, then Hashem is angry at him, then that would be when we sorted the sugya. We said that we at the beginning of Ois Tzadik Dalet. That would be what he's quoting in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. He's quoting it, but he himself doesn't hold that way. He himself holds that the problem is rather when a person didn't leave a Talmud. So in other words, he's not actually arguing with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Both of them agree when a person doesn't leave a Talmud, then that's a negative thing. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says when he doesn't leave over his son. Rabbi Yochanan quoted that, but he himself doesn't agree with it, which is why he could tell people, I lost all my sons.
I mean, if someone says something, if he agrees...
Because here we're saying, by elimination, we have to... Usually we would assume that not. Usually we would assume if he quotes something. Usually, we would assume if he quotes something, he agrees with it. But here, but here, we're forced to say because Rabbi Yochanan would otherwise be contradicting himself. We're forced to say that he quoted from Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, but in this particular case, he doesn't agree with it. In this connection, the Gemara says, "Dorosh Rabbi Pinchas Bar Choma." Rabbi Pinchas Bar Choma gave a drosha. My dichtiv, what does it mean, a posip? So you have like this. In Sefer Melachim, it talks about how, first of all, in Sefer Shmuel, it talks about how David's army, led by General Yoav, fought various wars around against the countries surrounding Eretz Yisrael and defeated them. One of them being Edom. We have Kapitel Samach. So there was a tremendous battle in Edom, and the pasuk says there that they'd killed all the males in Edom. We learned earlier in the Masechta that when he came back, David asked him why only the males, and it turned out that Yoav, when he was a Chedu Yingo, had misunderstood and thought that the pasuk is Timchas Zochar Amalek. So that was that. In David's times, they conquered Edom, and they were vassals from then on to the Jewish people for over 100 years, and so during the reigns of 8 kings, eventually in the times of Yehoram, one of the kings of Yehuda, who was a Russia, then they were able to declare their independence. Anyway, in between, the pasuk describes late in Shlomo's life. We know that Shlomo married many wives, and when he was old, some of them were worshipping Abba Zara, and he didn't protest, so the pasuk makes it sound as though he himself worshipped Abba Zara. So the pasuk describes in Melachim how Hashem caused various troublemakers to sprout up in the countries around Eretz Yisrael. One of them was in Edom. So the pasuk describes what had happened was that when Yoav and the Jewish army had wiped out all the males of Edom, there was one fellow named Hadad who managed to escape. He goes to Mitzrayim. He lives a very comfortable life there, but eventually, as the Gemara is going to quote now, he hears that it's safe for him to return, and he decides he's going to leave Mitzrayim and return to his homeland of Edom. So the pasuk says, "V'hadad shama b'Mitzrayim." So this Hadad, this Edomi fellow, while he was in Mitzrayim, he heard ki shochav David ramavosav, that David had lain with his fathers; he had passed away. V'chimeis Yoav saratzava, and that Yoav, the general, had also died. So now he figured it's safe to return, and so he tells Paroi, "I want to abandon all my high position and all the honor and everything that you're giving me in Mitzrayim." The pasuk describes over there. Paroi liked this Hadad very much. He even allowed him to marry the queen's sister, but Hadad is willing to give all that up to go back to Edom and start trying to rebuild things over there. Anyway, so the question is, so the Pinchas Chachama says, why does the pasuk describe David passing away as shochav, that he lay with his fathers, and by Yoav instead it says he died? So the reason is David sheniach ben. David left over a son, Nemrabai Shiva. So therefore it says just he lay down, he rested. Because in other words, in a certain sense, he's not truly dead because he has a son. So this goes with everything that we were saying before, that a person has a son, that he leaves over a son after him, then he's not completely gone from the world. Yoav, who didn't leave over a son, Nemrabai Misa, so therefore the pasuk says that he died because in that sense he's really completely dead. But the Gemara asks the Yoav Vayiniach Ben. So you're telling me that Yoav didn't leave over a son? V'achsiv. We find generations later, in the times of Ezra, when people were returning to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Mishnah. So first you have all the various families that it mentions over there who returned when Kurdish first proclaimed they can build the second Mishnah. Then you have 20 odd years later when Ezra was going to Eretz Yisrael, he also gathered more Jews to come with him, and the pasuk lists out the families and the number of people in each family that Ezra took with him, and the pasuk is Mnei Yoav. From the sons of Yoav, there was Evadia ben Yechiel. There was Evadia ben Yechiel together with a bunch of other men. So we see that. And if it's called Mibnei Yoav, and that implies, in other words, that it's not just that he's descended from Yoav on his mother's side or something, because Yichus goes primarily according to the father. So therefore, that means that Yoav actually left sons, and even 400 years later or so, there are still male descendants from Yoav's family.
What makes us say that it's the same Yoav?
We would assume the Pashtos it is, that the Pasuk is there. The Pasuk is there, it just says, Mibnei Yoav, we would assume it means the famous Yoav. By the way, you do also have in the list of families earlier in Ezra and also in Nehemiah, the list of families that came when Kodesh first said they can go rebuild the second Mishnah, it mentions a family of Pachas Moyav. Now the Gemara in Tainus tells us that the family of Pachas Moyav, there's different opinions whether it descended from David or from Yoav. Actually, there's two families over there. There's a family named Odin and a family named Pachas Moyav, and the Gemara in Tainus has Machlokas whether they whether this is a family descended from David or from Yoav. The answer is actually, the Gemara explains, they were descended from both, the families of David and of Yoav intermarried. But fine, from there you wouldn't have a proof that Yoav had sons. It just means, in other words, Yoav was a distinguished person, so therefore even if they're descended on the mother's side only, they would still trace their lineage to him. But here when we're saying Bnei Yoav, then it actually has to mean Ben Achaben. So Ella, no. Rather, we have to correct what we said. David shehiniach ben kamoisai. David who left over a son of his caliber, like him, who's worthy to succeed him as king, nemr by shchiva. So therefore, it says on him only shchiva, because again, he's not really truly dead. He's only like he's sleeping. Yoav shehiniach ben kamoisai. True, Yoav left over a son, but that son wasn't anywhere near his caliber as a talmid chacham, as a general, as a baal tzedakah. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that Yoav was a tremendous Baal Tzedakah and Machnas Orach, so his son wasn't of his caliber, Nemru ben Misa, so therefore by Yoav it just says that he died. Because in that sense, he doesn't have a Malamachim, so therefore he really is dead in that sense. So now that the Gemara had brought a Drosha from a Pinchas Bahama, so as the Gemara often does, then it brings a couple of other Droshas from him as well. Dorash Pinchas Bahama, Kosha Anius, Pesach Beis Shalodam, Yosim Chamishim Makas. Poverty in a person's household is worse than 50 Makas. So, in particular, in his household, Ben Yoyada explains in Olaz Pashat, he can't afford to provide food for his family, and they're complaining, so then we're saying that's worse than many Makas.
The Bavar Rebbe, I heard this from two people, Chassidim, the Bavar Rebbe.
Yeah.
I went for an interview for computers. They opened up the door and one said, "Hello, I'm the lawyer and this is the cheater." What does he mean? The Baal Rebbe gave a heter to the wife of Panasa because it has such terrible consequences. It just affects the whole family.
Interesting. Okay.
He gave a heter to lie.
Gave a heter to lie for Panasa. Interesting. Okay.
Anyway. Connected with this.
Okay. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Eov, in one of his speeches to his friends, he tells them, "Chonuni, chonuni, atim rea, you, my friends, have rachmanos on me, ki yad lekan nogabi, because the hand of Hashem has touched me." In other words, he's saying, "Poshka, I'm suffering tremendously surim, and what are you guys doing, and you're accusing me of doing averus and not accepting Hashem's judgment and so forth." So we see here, he says, the hand of Hashem struck me. Now we know from the Haggadah, we know that the one maka is called Etzba Elokimhi, and then Kamalakul be'etzba esema, or the makas in general are described with etzba as 10 makas, Kamalakul be'etzba esema makas, and Vala Yom Lakul Chamishim makas, and on the Yom Sof it was 50 because there it says as a Yoda Chazaka. As a Yodagdola. So therefore, so if Eov is complaining and saying that the hand of Hashem struck me, means that he's saying I was struck by 50 plagues. And yet, v'ka'ami le'chadre, yet his friends tell him later on, specifically Elihu, tells him, he says, al tefen al oven, don't turn to injustice. In other words, don't go complaining and questioning Hashem's justice. Ki al zeh b'chavta me'oni, because you would do better to choose this more than being poor. So Tosfos points out that no, we actually find at the beginning of Sefer Eov, it mentions how his animals were killed off or were taken captive or whatever. We find that his children also, but we never find he had land and gold and silver. The Pasuk never mentions anything happened to them. So therefore, so Elihu can tell him, Tosfos also points out, he does say when those first disasters hit, he's mitzadik all of us, he's matzik all of us again. He accepts Hashem's judgment. He says, "Orem yatzosim ibetin imi v'orem oshav shama. I came out naked from my mother's womb. I'm going to go back there. After my life is over, I'm going to go there naked." Implying, in other words, that he's as if he doesn't have any possessions. Fine. Tosfos says, doesn't mean at this point he has no possessions. He's saying I shouldn't be worried about the fact that I lost any of my possessions because for it I'm not going to take them with me anymore. Anyway, then Tosfos finishes off that also at the end of the Sefer, it says that afterwards all his friends and all his other friends and his family heard about everything that had befallen him, and they came and brought him presents. The Pasuk says each person brought him a ksita and a gold ring. What a ksita is, there's different possibilities. It can mean a coin, it can mean a sheep, etc. So on the face of it, doesn't that mean that they have to rebuild his fortune? No, says Tosfos, they were bringing him that as presents, like the kind of presents that you'd bring to a person to make him feel better or because he's an important person and you give him presents, but not because he was poor. So no, he wasn't in fact poor. And Elihu was telling him, you know what, you're better off. This was a better choice for you to suffer all of these punishments more than to be poor. In fact, there's a medrash along those lines that Hashem actually gave him the choice of the suffering or being poor, and Itaka chose to have the suffering. So we see, therefore, says Rabbi Pinchas Lachama, that being poor would be worse than the 50 makas that now Eov is complaining about having. Specifically, Eon Yaakov says that the poverty we're talking about is specifically when he doesn't have grain, when he doesn't have grain or food in the house, where the Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia, that causes quarrels in the house. It causes a lack of shalom bayis, and therefore that's worse even than 50 makas. Okay. Another drasha of a Pinchas Bachama, drasha Pinchas Bachama, Kosh Yesh Le Tzar Eichel L'Basech Beisai, when a person has trouble or a sick person in his house, Yelech Eitzel Chacham, he should go to a Tamad Chacham, V'Yivakish Olav Rachamim, that he should daven for Rachmonus for him from Hashem. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Hamas Melech Malachim Mavis, the anger of the king, namely the tzores that he's having, which shows Hashem's anger on him, Malachim Mavis is messengers of death, meaning a sick person who's dangerously ill. The Ish Chacham Yichaprena, but a wise man will wipe it off. Yechaprena, the word Yechaprena is Meloshon Kapara, so it means to be mechaper, to atone for it. But Rashbam points out that the basic meaning of the Shurish Kapar we find in different places means to wipe off. We find, for example, that the pasuk describes the basins that they used for the blood of the korbanos are called Kforei Kesef. They're called Kforei in the sense, because after the Kohen would dip his finger in to daub the blood of a chatas on the mizbeach, he would wipe his finger on the edge of the keli, because you have to do a separate dipping for each application of blood. So therefore, the kelim are called Kforei. Meloshit Kapur means to wipe off. So therefore, the Chacham will be able to wipe off that anger of Hashem. Marsha points out, Malachi Mavis is in plural, in the sense, because as the Gemara says elsewhere, Habish Shluchim Lamokin, Hashem has many different messengers in the world to carry out the punishments that a person is going to undergo. But meanwhile, you have, but then the Chacham davens for him, and instead he brings in light. But Urpnei Melachayim, as a different pasuk says, in the light of the king's face, there's light, so the Chacham is able to daven for the person and bring light instead from Hashem instead of the Malachi Mavis. We do see this today. We see that all the time people would come to the Rebbe and ask for brachas when people were sick in the previous Rebbeim, and you have various other tzaddikim that people go to, various other Rebbeim and tzaddikim that people go to also. Chacham, yes. So, in fact, there's an interesting word on the word Chacham over here. There's an interesting word from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He says the Gemara advisedly uses the word Chacham over here because the Chacham will know not to become a Baal Gaiva as a result of it. You use some other word, then he may start to think too big of himself. Look at me, my tefillos are answered. But if he's a Chacham, then that'll help him keep things in proper perspective and then not to allow that to happen. There is an interesting explanation, actually. The Me'iri gives an explanation on the Gemara. It doesn't mean that the Chacham davens for the person. It means the person should go to the Chacham who will teach him how to daven properly. Yelech Eitzel Chacham, V'Yivakish Olav Rachamim, and the Chacham will teach him how to be Mevakish Rachamim for himself and for his family. There is quite a bit of discussion and explanation among Achronim why it is that this word, that according to the explanation that we're saying that you can go to a Chacham. So the Chassam Sofer, for example, has a tshuva on it where basically he explains that the Chacham, the Tzaddik, is a part of the Jewish people. He's connected with every other, he's a neshama klolis. So therefore his tefila is going to be effective for every neshama that's tied to him. And there are a variety of other explanations why it is that it works. The Chacham spends his time learning Torah, so therefore his thoughts are pure, his mouth is pure, and therefore Hashem is more likely to listen to his tefillos, and a variety of other points. Now, continuing with the topic of Yerusha and Nachla, so a Mishnah in our Perek talks about the way that Eretz Yisrael was divided among the Shvatim. They came into Eretz Yisrael. They made a girdle and they split the land among all the Shvatim, and then each person has to be given their own plot of land in Eretz Yisrael. So how do they do that? Tanya, Rabbi Yoshi Omer, Liyotze Mitzrayim Neschalka Oretz. Rabbi Yoshi says that the land of Eretz Yisrael was divided based on the people who left Mitzrayim. So in other words, Rashbam explains, we look at the census that was taken a year after Yitzias Mitzrayim, and then we consider, now those people who were counted in that census, as the Pasuk tells us in Parashas Pinchas, almost none of them survived to go into Eretz Yisrael, except for Shevet Levi, fine, but outside of Shevet Levi, only Yoshua and Kalev, everybody else passed from all the other Shvatim, passed away in the desert. Nevertheless, we still consider as though they were the ones who Yarush in Eretz Yisrael. And that would mean, in other words, even if that person who left Mitzrayim had, let's say, 10 sons, it would mean between all of them, they're only going to get one portion. And then they'll divide it among themselves, so they'll have 10 tiny portions. Meanwhile, let's say another person who left Mitzrayim and had only one son, then that one son is going to get a full portion. That's how Rabbi Yoshi learns. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, L'shmois matis avoisam yincholu. They should inherit according to the names of the shvatim of their fathers. Now, their fathers, that pasuk is said in connect as said after the second census in Parshas Pinchas. And if it's saying that it goes according to the names of the shvatim of their fathers are the ones who left Mitzrayim. So we're saying that we don't look at who's going into Eretz Yisrael now, the number of portions that we're going to divide each Shevet's Nachla into is going to go according to the number of people from that Shevet, according to the number of men from that Shevet who left Mitzrayim, says Rabbi Yoshia. So says Rabbi Yoshia, what do we do with the pasuk that says in Parshas Pinchas that says to these, which is the 601,000 and change Jews that have just been counted in Parshas Pinchas, the generation that are now going to go into Eretz Yisrael, and the pasuk says la'ela techolika aretz benachla, to these Eretz Yisrael should be divided in the inheritance. So doesn't that mean the ones who are coming to Eretz Yisrael? Says Rabbi Yoshua, no. It means lo'ela ka'ela. It means that to these, the ones who are now coming into Eretz Yisrael have to be like the original ones who left Mitzrayim. When they left Mitzrayim, the ones who are going to Yarshin in Eretz Yisrael are only the ones who were at least 20 years old at the time. A child, a boy who left Mitzrayim, is not entitled to his own portion in Eretz Yisrael, even though he grew up during the 40 years in the desert and eventually had children of his own. So therefore, lo'ela, ko'ela, the same way now with the generation that's going into Eretz Yisrael, says Rabbi Yoshua, lo'hotzias et tefalim, so it comes to exclude people who were, children when they left Mitzrayim. So then, neither they nor their children are going to get their own portion in Eretz Yisrael. Only now, if this child had a father who himself left Mitzrayim, then very well, he's inheriting by virtue of his father. But if he didn't have a father, he didn't have an uncle or a brother or anybody who died in the desert, then he's not going to get a portion in Eretz Yisrael either. Rashbam also brings from Sifri another point as well, that it also means, la'eva techolik ha'aretz, means to these who are all ksherim and kedoshim, as opposed to the Rishoyim, who passed away in the desert, they don't get a chelik in Eretz Yisrael, and even their children don't. For example, the Meraglim forfeited their portion in Eretz Yisrael. So if one of the ten bad Meraglim, if his father left Mitzrayim, then very well the Meragl's children can get by virtue of their grandfather. But if the father himself had passed away before they left Mitzrayim, then no, there's not going to be any inheritance for them at all. That also we learn from the word lo'ela techolik ha'aretz. Actually, Rashbam points out that it means fine, not just in the source of their grandfather, it can also be their grandfather from their mother's side. If the Meragel's wife's father left Mitzrayim and he wasn't one of the Rishoyim, then fine, then the grandchildren can get by virtue of him too. Okay, so that's Rabbi Yoshia saying that we don't pay so much attention to the ones who are going into Eretz Yisrael. We focus on the ones who left Mitzrayim and we allot the portions for that shevet according to that. So now the Gemara we'll learn the next time, Be'ez Hashem, that for example, Shevet Yosef at one point came to Yeshua with a complaint. They said that we're very large and we don't have enough territory in Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara is going to, we'll learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem, that if we say that it was given to Yotzei Mitzrayim, then we understand the complaint. Shevet Menashe, in particular, grew enormously between the first and the second census, so it comes out that relative to other Shvatim, Shevet Menashe has many more people who are going to get a smaller portion in Eretz Yisrael. Because again, using the Rashbam scenario, one person passed away in the desert and left 10 sons, each of them is only getting a tiny sliver of land. So we'll talk about that in the Gemara tomorrow, Bez Hashem, but in any case, to continue now, Rabbi Yonasan says no. L'boy ha'oretz, niskalki ha'oretz. Eretz Yisrael was basically divided according to those who actually came into Eretz Yisrael. So we don't pay attention to the ones who left Mitzrayim, we pay attention to the ones who are going into Eretz Yisrael right now. So, in other words, Rashbam teaches out. In the scenario we said before, let's say you have two brothers, Reuben and Shimon, who both left Mitzrayim, and Reuben had 10 sons and Shimon had only one. According to Rabbi Yoshia's method, we would say there's only two portions in Eretz Yisrael allotted to these 11 cousins, and 10 of them are going to have to crowd into one small area, and the other one, their cousin, Shimon's one son, is going to get a large portion. Rabbi Yonasan says no, we're going to have 11 portions, and each one of these cousins is going to get an equal amount. Shenema la'ela techolik aretz, as the pasuk says, to these the land should be divided. To these, meaning the ones that were just counted now in Parshas Pinchas. El amani mekayim l'shmois matas avosim yinkalu. So says Rabbi Yonasan, what do we do with the pasuk about them inheriting according to the names of the shvatim of their parents? So says Rabbi Yoshia, says Rabbi Yonasan, mishuna nachla zu mikol nachlas shva olam. This nachla of Eretz Yisrael is different than any other Nachla in the world. In general, with Nachla, the living inherit from the dead. A person passes away, and he has children, and they inherit him. But kan mesim yoshim chayim. Here, the mesim inherit, in a certain sense, from the living, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain. As we're going to explain. By the way, when we have in minor loshin, we have the expression over there in the Tefillah, Kana Mesim Yoshim Asachayim, that comes from our Gemara over here. There in minor loshin, it's being used in a different sense that we come and we say our Tefillahs, and that benefits the neshamas of the Mesim. Anyway, what it means is like this. In other words, Rashbam explains. Suppose in our scenario again, you have two brothers, Reuben and Shimon, where Reuben had 10 sons and Shimon had one. So says Rabbi Yonasan, here's what we're going to do. We start with, because there are 11 people from this family coming into Eretz Yisrael, therefore we have 11 portions are allotted to them. But then what we do is, we consider it as though they're just doing, in effect, as shluchim of their parents. So now what we're going to do is we're going to have, as if their parents, Reuben and Shimon, who passed away, are going to inherit it from their living descendants, so we're going to give it back to them. So now we take these 11 portions and we divide them into two equal parts. And then we give it to the ones who are coming to Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, it comes out, Reuben's children are going to get between them 5.5 portions. And Shimon's one son is going to get 5.5 portions. So it still comes out, like Rabbi Yoshia is saying, that Shimon's one son gets a lot more territory than Reuben's, but it's not going to be quite so imbalanced as Rabbi Yoshia said, where it's going to be 10-1. Rather, Rabbi Yonasan is saying, the 10 sons of Reuben are going to get between them 5.5 portions. So each one will get just under half a portion. Meanwhile, Shimon's one son will get 5.5 portions. So that's how we do it. Rashbam explains in some detail, brings with the Sifri more detail about it, but that's the gist of it. So now, therefore, says Rabbi Yonasan, that way we'll be Mekayim both Pesukim. So Rebbe says, let me give you an analogy to explain what this is like. Suppose you have two brothers who are Kohenim who live in one city. And as Kohenim, they're entitled to Truma. Now, the usual way that Truma would be given was the farmer would separate Truma in his granary, which was usually someplace outside the city, and the Kohenim would go there and collect the Truma from there. So now, la'echad yeshle ben echad, ve'echad yeshle shnei bonim. Suppose now these two brothers, one of them has one son and one of them has two sons. The three cousins go together to the granary to collect truma on behalf of their fathers. So each one is telling his children to be his shluchim and go collect the truma. And Rashbam adds the detail that also we're talking about, they made the deal between them that whatever truma they get, these two brothers, they're going to divide it equally. So Reuben has two sons, Chanoich and Palu, let's say. Shimon has one son, Nemuel, And now the three cousins, Chanoch, Palu, and Nemuel, are all going on behalf of their fathers, where the deal is whatever truma they collected, their fathers are going to split equally. So, the one who only has one son is going to get one portion. The one who has two sons, each one is going to get a portion, so therefore they're going to be given two portions. And then they bring it back to their fathers. And then they divide it equally. So says Rebbe, this helps illustrate for you this business about how they divided Eretz Yisrael, where they did the same kind of thing. We start with the current generation, and we decide the number of portions based on the current generation, but then we go and redivide it equally based on the previous generation, and then go and give it to them accordingly, which is Rabbi Yonason's opinion. What? So now what we're saying, so in the scenario with Truma, what's going to happen is that both Reuben and Shimon are each going to get 1.5 portions of Truma. Let's say the Yisrael farmer is giving a saw of truma to each person, to each Kohen who comes. So now, when Reuben's one son comes, then he's getting one saw of truma. When Shimon's two sons come, they get two saw. Now they have three saw between them. But the deal was that Reuben and Shimon said, any truma that any of us gets, we're dividing equally among our families, so therefore Reuben winds up with a saw and a half, and Shimon winds up with a saw and a half. And then if they decide to give it to their children to eat, let's say, then Reuven's one son has a saw and a half, and Shimon's sons each have 3/4 of a saw. So says Rebbe, this helps you illustrate the idea with the division of Eretz Yisrael, where the same idea, the number of plots of land, originally the number of plots of land goes according to the number of people from the current generation who are entering Eretz Yisrael, but then we redivide it based on their fathers, and then we divide and then we apportion it between them according to that.
So now they have
11 portions to be divided among two people. So 11 divided by 2 is 5.5. So it means therefore Reuven's children, between all of them, are going to have 5.5 portions. Here, let's say for example again, Rebbe's illustration was with Truma. Now let's say for example with land. Let's say for example the deal was, let's say in a particular shevet, every family is a, let's say for example, in a particular shevet, every person who was counted in the census is supposed to get, let's say, a base saw, an area in which you could plant a saw, which is 50 by 50 amos, let's say. So now what we would say is, if we have, again, Reuven's 10 sons and Shimon's 1, what we're going to say is then altogether, between the 11 of them, there's going to be 11 plots of that size, so there's going to be 550 square amos. Now, though, we make it as though Reuben and Shimon are inheriting from their children. So, therefore, that 550 is now going to be split evenly between the two families, so 275 apiece. Reuben's 10 sons, then, will each get one-tenth of that. So, each of them will end up with 27.5 square, with each one of them, 50 by 50 amos, we said to begin with, so as a base saw, it's 2,500 square amos, so then fine, times 11 is going to be, 27,500. Divided in two, comes out to 13,000 and change, so the 10 sons, each of them is going to get about 130 square amos, and meanwhile, Shimon's one son is going to get 5.5 of those sections, so he's going to get, so he's going to get a much larger portion. He's going to get then, so what would it be then? He'd be getting about 13,000 square amos for himself.
Well, the three children get equal portions, so how comes it when they do
it? In the case of the truma, the three sons are not getting equal portions. The two fathers get equal portions, but one father has more children than the other, so the children are getting less. The same way, Rabbi Yonason is saying that when it comes to Reuven and Shimon's children, now it's Israel, Reuven's children, who are more, are going to get less per person than Shimon's. Why would we do such a strange thing? Why, according to Rabbi Yoshia, do we go according to Yotzim Mitzrayim, and according to Rabbi Yonason, we take into account Yotzim Mitzrayim? Why don't we just say straight out, those who are coming into Eretz Yisrael now get it? So there's a number of reasons that Mephoshim give. One point is, Hashem had promised Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas Vayera, Ve'evesi eschem al aretz, and I'm going to bring you to Eretz Yisrael, and you're going to inherit it. Now, that was the original plan before the Chet Meraglim, was the people who are leaving Eretz Yisrael are going to be the ones coming into Eretz Yisrael, and the ones leaving Mitzrayim are going to be the ones coming into Eretz Yisrael and inheriting. It didn't work out that way. Nevertheless, Hashem made a promise, and it has to be kept somehow, so therefore, so doing it this way and considering Yotzei Mitzrayim fulfills that promise. That's one explanation. Another explanation, the Shalach Kodesh, I think, says, look, I mean, that generation, they suffered through all the Shibud and Mitzrayim, the generation of the fathers. They raised their children as Jews. They didn't assimilate among the Mitzrayim, so they deserve some kind of reward. And their reward is that Eretz Yisrael is going to be given according to them and not exclusively just according to their children. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGola, Zion Nissen. So, the Rebbe talks about La'asid Lavoi. We're going to have, of course, the Metzius of all world is going to be completed and perfected. This is one of the basic concepts of believing in Mashiach, as explained in many Pesukim and in Midrashim. Now, so what's going to happen when there's the Geula Asidah? We surely can't say that Hashem is going to wipe out and destroy all the Umas Olam. It's not logical. It's against the Torah. The Torah is Doch Zeracher Dachinayim V'Cholnes Sivaser Shalom. The Torah's ways of peace are pleasantness and peace. And Loi Barak Kodesh Baruch Hu Dover Olam Dover Afal Batala. Hashem didn't create anything useless in the world. So it would be against the whole concept of Yiddishkeit if we were to say that Hashem would destroy all the Umas Olam. This whole concept of that there should be war and people having to be killed is really not in accordance with the spirit of the Torah. When you have no choice, you have goyim are attacking Jewish cities, then we have to go to war to protect the Jewish people. Other than that, the whole concept of war is against Torah, and therefore, the Rebbe discusses in the Sicha, it's not that not when the Mashiach comes, the goyim will have to be killed or anything. It means that they're going to be transformed. They're going to be transformed into the evil of them is going to be taken out, and we'll have the goodness that is in them. Fine, Amalek is an exception to the rule, but other than that, we're talking about the regular run-of-the-mill Umas Olam. So we'll have more about it in a continuation of that sikha we'll learn tomorrow, Baruch Hashem. There's many sikhas where the Rebbe talks about this topic. For example, you also have in Bilam's last Nevuah, he says about Mashiach, the Karkar Kol B'nei Sheis, that he's gonna destroy all the children of Sheis, which on the face of it means all of humanity, because all of humanity is descended from Sheis, the son of Adam. The Rebbe talks about in the sikha also, it can't possibly mean he's gonna destroy them. Again, that doesn't really fit with the whole concept of Mashiach, who comes to bring peace to the world, and so forth. So that ends up explaining what it actually means that he's gonna destroy them. Then again, it means basically he's gonna destroy the negativity in them and bring out the goodness that's in them. We started learning. We were learning yesterday about not being allowed to fast during Nissan with certain exceptions. So now, what about if you have, for example, a person does a Tainus Cholim? Now the din is your person is allowed to do a Tainus Cholim even Shabbos or Yom Tov. Basically, because if a person is so bothered by a dream that he figures he needs to fast for it, to be mevatel any potential bad gzera against him, then the Alter Rebbe explains in Hilchos Shabbos, basically at that point, fasting would be a greater tainug for him than eating. He's so upset he can't eat, so therefore the fasting itself would be a greater earning for him. So now, suppose that a person has such a dream in Nissan and fasts a Tainus Cholim. Now, the usual rule is like this. Suppose a person does do a Tainus Cholim on Shabbos or Yom Tov. The din is, the Gemara explains, later on, after Shabbos or after Yom Tov, he has to fast another fast to be mechaper for the fact that he fasted on Shabbos or Yom Tov. He was entitled to because of Oinig Shabbos, but nevertheless, the fact is he still was mevatel, the regular Oinig Shabbos of eating. Now, says the Alter Rebbe, suppose that happens during Nissan. He doesn't have to fast another fast for that, because look, the whole thing of not fasting during Nissan is basically just a minhag. So therefore he doesn't need to be mechaper for that for fasting in Nissan. In that connection, then suppose that it happens on Shabbos during Nissan, that a person does a Tainus Cholim. And he fasts on Shabbos, and again the din is that then he has to fast another fast to be mechaper for that. That also he's allowed to do during Nissan. Because again, that also he's allowed to do during Nissan, because again, the whole concept of not fasting during Nissan is a minhag. In the same way, the Alter Rebbe continues. If Rosh Chodesh Nissan comes out on Sunday and on Erev Shabbos, which was Shabbos, he'd fasted Tainus Cholim, he'd be allowed to fast Rosh Chodesh Nissan for having fasted on Shabbos. And the idea is the Alter Rebbe explains in Hilchos Shabbos the logic behind it again, because Rosh Chodesh Nissan is anyway a Tainus Tzadikim for Nadav and Avihu. Okay. more about the specialty of Chodesh Nissen. We don't say Tachnun. So the Alter Rebbe says, nevertheless, we say Vanaseach Yancha, although that's not the minhag. The Alter Rebbe writes in the Siddur, minhag the Alter Rebbe writes in the Siddur. Minhag Sfarad, that whenever we don't say Tachnun, we don't say Vanaseach, and so that's what we do. We don't say during Nissen either. Similarly, the Alter Rebbe says, on Monday and Thursday, during Nissen, you would say Kela Rechapayim. Again, that's not our minhag. The Alter Rebbe makes it clear in the Siddur. We often find, as we know, the Alter Rebbe wrote the Shulchan Aruch earlier in his life, and the Siddur much later, and we follow the Siddur where it contradicts the Shulchan Aruch. So that's how it is over here, as far as Yancha Hashem and as far as Kela Rechapayim. Now, Erev Pesach, we don't say those. Even those who say them during the rest of Nissan, Erev Pesach itself is a Yom Tov, as the Alter Rebbe explains later on in Hilchos Pesach, because that was the day when you bring the Korban Pesach, and therefore it's considered a minor Yom Tov in its own right, which has implications as far as dinim of not being able to do malach on it, and so forth.
So
Mizmor L'Soda, that's the next thing. Erev Pesach and Chol HaMoed, we don't say Mizmor L'Soda, as the Alter Rebbe explains in Hilchos Tefillah. The reason is because the Mizmor L'Soda is meant to be instead of a Korban Toda. Now, a Korban Toda contains chometz bread in it, so you wouldn't be able to bring it on Pesach, and you can't bring it on Erev Pesach either, because it's called Ein Mevi'im Kodshim L'Beisach P'sul. You're not allowed to cause that Kodshim are more likely to become possible by becoming noiser. Like this, you have a Toda can be eaten on the day it was brought and the night afterwards, but here you can't, because you only have two chatzos to eat. To eat chometz. So you'd be more causing the korban to be more likely to become noiser and become possible. Therefore, you can't bring a korban Toda Erev Pesach. Therefore, in token of that, we don't say Mizmor L'Soda on Erev Pesach. Shachos Erev Pesach, because you couldn't bring a Toda the morning of Erev, you couldn't bring a Korban Toda the morning of Erev Pesach, because you'd have only a very short amount of time to eat the chometz bread of it, and therefore, in token of that, we don't say Mizmor L'Soda on Erev Pesach, nor on Chol HaMoed Pesach. Another din the Alter Rebbe mentions is that sometimes it's necessary for the Kehillah to declare a Cherem, that you're allowed to do in Chodesh Nissan. Now, you're not allowed to do in Chodesh Tishrei. The Alter Rebbe explains in Hilchos Rosh Hashanah V'Yom Kippurim, we don't want to arouse the Midas Hadin that time of year. But Nissan, that's not an issue, so therefore you are allowed to do it if necessary.